Legendary children's author Beverly Cleary died last week at the age of 104. Cleary wrote more than 40 books over about 50 years. Her characters like Ramona Quimby and Henry Huggins entertained kids for decades. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about some of Beverly Cleary's essential books on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
I'm Guy Raz, and on NPR's How I Built This, how Lauren and Bob Monahan found the sweet spot for selling their high-end Upa Baby strollers by capturing two key markets, A-list celebrities and everyday dads. Subscribe or listen now.
Welcome back. Joining us from her home in Washington, D.C. is Weekend Edition book editor Barry Hardiman. Welcome back, Barry.
Hey there. How's it going?
I am so excited that we have you here to talk to us about this. We've been doing this Essentials series with actors up until now, but it occurred to us that for a lot of readers, Beverly Cleary is about as essential as a creator can get. She wrote, as we mentioned, more than 40 books between 1950 and 1999. She had worked as a children's librarian. She believed there was sort of an unmet need for books about kids who were special, even though they were ordinary, lovable, even though they were imperfect. She also wrote some books for and about young teenagers, which we would probably now call YA. So we're going to talk about a few of her essential books. Barry, what is first on your list?
Well, I know everybody thinks I'm going to start with Ramona, but I'm not. I'm going to throw you a little curveball because...
You got layers.
Yeah, I got layers. So, Dear Mr. Henshaw is a very slim little volume, and I still have my original copy, which shows you what a, I think of Beverly Cleary as a comfort read. I have them now as an adult. As a kid, they were even more important. But Dear Mr. Henshaw is about a young man named Lee Botts, who begins an epistolary relationship with an author named Boyd Henshaw. Now, the thing about this is that, first of all, I'm sure that this was the first novel I read that was in letters, which was such an exciting thing as a kid to sort of observe another kind of narrative style.
Yes.
And it feels very much like you're peeking in on somebody when you're reading their letters. And just the way the story is told is just so wonderful. And then also the problems that Lee Botts is dealing with. He's living with his mom. He's got divorced parents. And he's truly, as we said in the beginning, he is a special and ordinary special kid. One of the things about this book that I love is that it doesn't date that much. It's still very hard to have your parents split up. It is still really, really terrible when the mean kids steal stuff from your lunchbox. It is still hard to spell certain words, which you see his spelling improve throughout the book. And you also see this marvelous, the sort of the growth of the character. So you see the author, Boyd Henshaw, who is first kind of curmudgeonly, really begin to sort of help Lee come out of his shell and, of course, become a writer himself. And both characters emerge in this way that is this sneaky kind of narrative where all of a sudden you feel like you are in this relationship. You two are writing and reading these letters. And I mean, whenever I was in a bad mood or if I'd gotten in a fight with my parents, I would race up the stairs and I would, you know, like cry and stomp around and make sure they heard me slam the door. And then I would pull this book out because it's very slim and it was a comfort read. This is a great one. It really holds up. Go ahead and grab it. And I really, by the way, would say this one, I think, works from like some 8-year-olds all the way up till I am, you know, in my very, very late 20s. So super. Early. Uh-huh. So, you know, this one can go early. You can read it to your kid. Your kid can discover it on their own. This is a wonderful, and you should discover it as well.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting to hear about this book from you because I didn't know this one, right? This is a 1983 book, won the Newbery Medal.
Mm-hmm. Very prestigious children's prize.
Absolutely. And this came out when I was 12. I'm a little bit older than you. I'm in my even later 20s. And so I was a little probably past my peak Beverly Cleary reading, particularly of new books. Uh-huh. What I do remember reading of hers when I was that age, we would probably call it YA now, but it reads a little bit younger than that to me even. It's kind of like what we would now obnoxiously call tweens.
Yeah. It's like middle grade YA kind of crossovery. Yeah,
I really loved this book she wrote called 15, which is about a girl who, you know, wants to meet a boy. It was written in the 1950s. It's very old-fashioned. When you read it, you know, she's ironing a dress to go on a date to the movies. And it's I mean, now it's like a period piece.
Yeah.
But I loved that book when I was like 10 or 11. It was probably the first love story that I really, really loved reading before I was reading, you know, grown up Harlequin romances and stuff like that, which I started doing in my teens. Mm-hmm. Before that, I was in love with this book, 15, which, as we were talking about earlier, she falls in love with a boy named Stan.
Can you imagine? He's the love interest. When Stanley is your love interest, you know it's the 50s.
Nothing against Stans, right? The same thing happened with the Streetcar Named Desire. You could have a hot Stanley, right? Mm-hmm. But I loved that book. And I read it so many times that when I looked at it again last night, I was like, oh, I remember everything that happens in this book.
Isn't that amazing?
I remember every event that happens in this book and every kid she babysits. I absolutely love that one. So I'm glad you brought a book that's a little bit outside the most common little kids' books.
And I will say, you know, here's the thing about 15. You know, before you do get to the, whether it's Harlequin or you get to the sexier, you know, the holy trinity of Judy, Judith, and Jackie, it's kind of lovely to read this very, very buttoned up romance, which is really even not a romance. It's about crushes. It's about a crush. I think it culminates in them going to like a fundraiser, like, or like a raffle of some kind.
Right. I think that's right. And it felt not intimidating to me as like a 10 or 11 year old. Yes. It didn't feel kind of too intense for me, even as a very, very early reader of love stories. Mm-hmm. There's a huge place in my heart for that book. So in addition to Dear Mr. Henshaw, what are we going to talk about next?
Let's go to Click-A-Cat Street. I can't even say it. Click-A-Tat Street. Let's go there.
Click-A-Tat Street.
That, of course, is the famous street where Ramona Quimby lived in Portland. And Ramona is, I think it's safe to say, it's her most beloved character. Mm-hmm. I think people who haven't even read the whole series have probably come across Ramona in some way. I have the great fortune to have a seven-year-old. So I have just, I've been reading these books to him. And what I am just totally stunned by is that these are books that are written in the, you know, the 70s and the 80s. And the gender dynamics are actually like pretty good. You know, I mean, as a person that's read a lot of Encyclopedia Brown, whew, that could use an update. You know, the relationship between mom and dad Quimby is so real and wonderful. The siblings are so, I mean, this is how siblings interact, whether they're fighting over toys, televisions, video games, it doesn't matter. This is how real people interact. And Ramona is really, really special because Ramona is a pain. In fact, Ramona is a pest. I think the most well-known book of that is probably called Ramona the Pest. And she is really a kind of a difficult kid. All the toothpaste out of the tube, taking a bite out of every single apple. You know, she has done every impulse that a child has. I promise you, Ramona has done. And every mistake, you know, the like the pulling of the friend's hair. The my favorite is, you know, she has a doll named Chevrolet. Because it's a beautiful name.
Yes, I love that too.
But here's the thing I really want to recommend it for. Because obviously, you know, the prose is lovely. The characters are just live. It's hard to even say the writing is good because it just feels like you're in their house. But what Beverly Cleary does so well is these were the first books where I really saw a family working through their financial situation. Mr. Quimby, you know, and Ramona and her father, he loses his job. He is in a bad mood. He's smoking. You know, Ramona has to try to help him quit smoking. He's keeps going to trying to apply for jobs. He eventually gets a job at the supermarket as a checkout guy. And they are really, you know, they have to buy the less expensive cat food. They have to make real decisions. And Mrs. Quimby gets a job, which is, you know, something she didn't expect to do at that point, but is also kind of a marvelous part of this whole thing. But the way these financial difficulties are handled is so sensitive. And it's not the central, you know, sometimes too often with these books, they're teaching you a lesson. Mm-hmm. This is just a family making a decision about what kind of diapers to buy.
Right.
And she and Ramona is absolutely aware of it, not in a way that is, you know, it is sometimes an anxiety and sometimes a fact of her life, the way it is for most of us. I think, you know, it is truly this real portrait of what it is like to be a human child that is really aware of all the things that are happening with her parents and her family.
Yeah. What I really loved when I started reading the Ramona books, and, you know, she started off as a four-year-old in a book about Henry Huggins, who was friends with Beezus. Beezus is her sister, whose real name is Beatrice. So Beezus was introduced as a character who had this little little sister, Ramona.
Very super fudge-esque.
Then she kind of became her own character. When I started reading these books as a little kid, it was so special to me to see this girl who was, she had just big feelings about everything, which is how I very much was as a little kid.
Yeah.
Big feelings about everything, wanted to sort of express every emotion that she had. When she decided that she really loved her kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Binney, she loved her the most, you know?
Yeah.
Seeing this girl who has, as you sort of mentioned, no impulse control, she kind of is still wrestling with all these giant feelings, and yet she's so sympathetically drawn in the sense that the books really understand that she's a kid who wants to be loved and approved of and just wants to be part of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved the fact that she's not having sort of spectacular adventures like Eloise or Heidi or, you know, it's not that kind of stuff. She lived a sort of relatively ordinary life with ordinary, as you mentioned, parents.
Mm-hmm.
And she has just all these little things that happen. The stuff with making the paper bag owls and the stuff with drawing her name with a Q like a cat. And I remember the time that they were having the house worked on. She told everyone there was a hole in the house.
Yes.
And, you know, it turned out the people were unimpressed by the hole in the house. I related to this character so much because she's so stubborn and emotive.
Yeah.
Boy, the Ramona books were important to me as a little kid.
And if you were not the most emotive child, as I know that you were, and certainly I was, if you were the other, if you were the maybe the older sister, then there was Beezus.
Mm-hmm.
And Beezus is a great character who is so worried because she doesn't feel as creative as her little sister.
Yep.
Because she's trying to keep it together. You know, there was really something for everybody. And the thing about Ramona Forever, where she is in actually in third grade, a little bit older, and her relationship with Beezus, who is really now starting to become a teenager, she's starting to have skin problems, she's starting to get real grumpy, and that relationship really changes in a way that is really, really sensitively drawn. There's a moment where she calls her sister Pizza Face, which is like, she doesn't mean it like you have a pimple. And she realizes, you know, oh, this is really hurtful in a way that I, you know, like something's changed here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how sometimes you read a book and it's part of a wonderful series, and sometimes you read a book and you're like, oh, especially a children's book, and you're like, oh, this is a novel.
Yeah.
This is a novel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This stands alone on its own as a novel. And there's almost nothing that happens that I like that you can't relate to. And I notice, you know, my 7-year-old boy, he can latch on to all of these things. There's a wonderful moment in Ramona and her mother where Mrs. Quimby and Mr. Quimby have a fight, and it is a real fight.
Yeah.
It is the kind of fight I would have with my husband. Remember, I'm emotive. And you feel Ramona's fear and Mrs. Quimby's, you know, fed upness and, you know, all of the pressures of Mr. Quimby's job and wanting to be, you know, it is so sensitive.
Yeah, what these books remind me of in some ways are all of the pieces of art that take seriously the emotions and problems of young people, right? You know, most often I've seen this in things about teenagers, my so-called life, and Freaks and Geeks and things like that that can really honor the fact that your feelings at that age are important. I think this is where I see that with people who are even younger. This is where I see that with people who are in kindergarten and elementary school, that even then your feelings are important and they're important to you, even if they seem like this will pass, you'll grow out of it. And I think that's what always distinguished her for me was the respect that she had for the feelings and the sensitivities of little kids, rather than everything being about how you'll grow out of it and it won't matter when you're older.
Yeah. You know, the thing that is just so perfect is the respect for the little kid, but it's also the respect for real families where there's no wizard, where there's no rich aunt that's going to leave you a mansion. This was my family. I recognized it.
Yeah, me too. And so we want to know also what you think about your favorite Beverly Cleary books. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Barry, thank you so much for being here for this episode.
I can't think of someone I would rather talk to Beverly Cleary about.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And we will see you on Monday.